My name is Ashok Mohanraj, and this is the I Speak for the Trees podcast. What's going on, guys? And welcome to the I Speak for the Trees podcast. I'm your host, Ash, and welcome to this week's episode. It's not really a title, but we're going to be talking about using entertainment as a form, as a form of environmental advocacy and environmental action. And so today on the podcast, I have a special friend with me. His name is Andrew. And so, Andrew, can you tell us a little bit more about yourself and kind of why you think promoting environmentalism or environmental action is important to society today?
Yeah, so I'm a grad student here at the University of Waterloo. My research focuses mainly on the carbon fluxes in restored peatlands, which is a kind of wetland, for those who may not know. But really my interests lie a lot more broadly with things to do with the environment and sustainability. I think that promoting environmental action education is important, especially these days where we need so much action, but there's a lot of stories about what's going on and all the doom and gloom, but people don't always know what to do about it, or people don't know how to vote on certain issues because there's a lot of misinformation spreading around. So I think that it's important to promote environmental action education in a way that's clear for everybody to understand, and that sort of promotes them to change their ways or do an action.
For sure. And like, yeah, the reason behind this podcast, or why I asked to be on it, because it's like we're having this conversation, we're kind of like frustrated with like the available tools and resources out there. Like, it's kind of very inaccessible. It's very kind of you have to go out of your way to find out something about the
right
environment. Like, I like to say this example, like, it's easier to find out like which NBA player Khloe Kardashian is dated than it is to find out if your drinking water source is clean. So that's
totally
kind of, it's just kind of ridiculous in that sense. So it's kind of like, for people in the environmental realm, it's kind of like our responsibility to kind of go out there, kind of make this more accessible and kind of show everyone that environmentalism or environmental advocacy isn't just for environmentalists in that sense. So, okay, so personally, what do you think is like the biggest barrier to promoting environmental action in a general audience? Not from like, as environmentalists, obviously we're the people that care about this, but how do we kind of relay that information to people outside of this kind of isolated realm?
I think if you'd asked me, maybe like a year or so ago, I would have said that the biggest problem would be getting people to care. Mm-hmm. But I think now people really do care. And I think the biggest problem is the inability to convey actionable items to the person, because someone can read all they want about these horrible things happening all over the world, but it doesn't really do them or the world any good if all they do is feel bad about it and then
mm-hmm.
sit on it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I recognize that like everyone's situation is different as well. Like, they may not even be able to vote. They may not be able to give up their car to ride their bikes to work every day. These are all, or able to start living zero waste. Like, these are the kinds of things that like are often being spoken about in the media, like things that we can do. But even then, you can kind of get like fatigued by being told what to do. So I'm not sure what the answer is, to be honest. I think
yeah.
that the biggest barrier is definitely connecting people to what they can do.
Yeah.
Because you can be told what to do, but not everyone's abilities are the same,
mm-hmm.
you know? Like
yeah.
I said, like, so I think the biggest issue is connecting people with what they can do
mm-hmm.
based on their own current situation.
Yeah, exactly. It's a lot of circumstantial stuff based on people's comfort levels too. Like, not everyone's willing to give up meat or things like that.
Yeah.
Like, even in the summer when the Amazon was on fire, like, you'll see all these people on Instagram sharing the post, save the Amazon, but at the same time, like, okay, but do they know the solutions that are in place to kind of how to prevent that from happening? Like, do they know that kind of meat consumption is the reason behind these kind of purposeful fires and things like that? So it's kind of making sure they understand the actual, like, sure, like, everyone, obviously someone's going to care if the Amazon's on fire and like orangutans are going extinct and things like that. There's a,
mm-hmm.
like, it's human nature to kind of feel sympathy or feel bad for that, but it's kind of, how do we move on to that next step and kind of make the solutions more accessible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, even in the case of like the Amazon, they don't, that's something that is, I would think, kind of out of our control.
Mm.
You can reduce your own personal meat consumption, but, and that may, if the whole world starts reducing their meat consumption, that would impact
yeah.
those fires. I think we know that, but there's also a lot of it is the politics that's happening in Brazil, and so you may not be able to actually impact it, but you could still be made more aware of what's happening there without the misinformation and political theater of it all.
That's a really good point, because a lot of things there are a lot of uncontrollable factors. Like, a lot of environmentalists look at things very isolatedly. They look at it from an environmental perspective, but there are also economic and political factors that people have to consider, and that's something that environmental advocacy includes, not just advocating for environmental justice and stuff like that, but how can we create a viable system that promotes that? So how can we kind of fund climate adaptation? How can we fund, how can we promote democracy within societies who are facing these kind of autocratic or tyrant societies, things like that. So, okay, so you also work for Imprint, which is a kind of like a community-based journal. So can you tell us what it's like to kind of be part of the storytelling role in that sense?
Yeah, I think it's interesting that you say storytelling, because that is actually more in line with what I do at Imprint than what Imprint really does. Like, it is a campus newspaper, and it is modeled after a traditional newspaper where it's based on discussing events that have happened, like sort of breaking stories. Like, they covered the data leak of the Accommodate You data, that sort of thing. But that's not necessarily what I've ever been interested in doing, and I've never necessarily wanted to be a reporter in that pure sense. But I do at Imprint get to do I have a little bit of a carte blanche where I can kind of do whatever I want, because I pitched an idea to them and they really liked it. So now I get to write this weekly column where I am talking about exploring Kitchener-Waterloo using the new LRT, because I want to show off all that Kitchener-Waterloo has to offer beyond campus and the University Shops Plaza. So there is some room for storytelling, because that is kind of reporting, because that is talking about this new thing that's in our community and how it's opening up parts of our community to students. So I get to tell stories that I've experienced through my times exploring Kitchener-Waterloo. And so, there is some room for storytelling at Imprint, but really it is more about it is more about strict journalism, and I am a little frustrated by that. One of the first things I wrote about for Imprint was about bird watching in urban environments, particularly on campus.
Yeah.
I wrote it about all the birds that I could see at R&T Park. And so to me, that story, even though it was reporting in a loose sense, the story was about looking closely at your environment and seeing all the beauty that lies within plain sight when you look closely.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the kinds of stories that I'm more interested in sharing.
Mm-hmm. And what was kind of the inspiration for this sharing of these stories, or kind of being able to be a technical writer and kind of investigate the issues that you were kind of interested in and kind of portraying the information to the general audiences or general public?
I don't know. I guess I like to talk. I like for people to listen to my thoughts, which sounds self-absorbed and stuff.
Yeah.
But, I think that everybody has something to share. And if you're thinking about something a lot and ruminating on something a lot, it's nice to be able to have a platform to share it on.
Yeah.
And because your ideas do you no good if they're just
stuck in your head.
Exactly.
I mean, for someone with your experience too, not everyone has that experience or has that prior background or knowledge of environmental issues, things like that. So kind of being able to put that out there is not just good for you to share your ideas, but it allows other people to get exposed and things like that. So
totally.
I think it's really important. And for me, why I started this is just because for me, I could learn about environmentalism all I want, but at the end of the day, I know the whole idea of one person can make a change and things like that, but at the same time, you also have to be aware that you, your ideas are only good as how many people they reach as well. So you have to be able to make sure that you're making your ideas in a digestible manner, so that way you're able to reach people, you kind of convey that passion, convey that motivation, and convey those steps that people can take. And for me, I'm coming from a world where people aren't very environmentally conscious. A lot of people, all my friends are business people, engineers, not very aware of their environment. Even my roommates use plastic water bottles, and I don't tell them this, but I kind of lose respect for them after every time they use plastic water bottle, and I continue to tell them, stop using plastic water bottles. So for me, it's kind of like, it's a challenge. It's kind of like, even like in today's generation or today's society, climate change and like environmentalism is kind of like the most existential or most prominent threat that I feel like we're facing. And so for us, it's kind of like, it's our chance to kind of be like the hero generation, kind of be in those history textbooks and be like, hey, we recognize this issue. We're not gonna let our circumstances affect us. We're not gonna let our age affect us. We're not gonna let our circumstances affect us, and kind of go out there and be agents of change and create that change no matter what anyone says to us. And so that's really important because it's all about collaboration, co-management, working together. And so, yeah.
I think that actually sometimes not telling something in a strict newspaper article sort of way, but just telling a story can be important to teach lessons. Like you say, your roommates are using the water bottles, and that's very frustrating to you, but you can't really call them out on it because it's something that you know, would obviously cause tension. But you can talk about the impacts of the water bottles and stuff, or tell a story about how you saw something happen that involves a discarded water bottle or something, and like through that way you can sort of teach lessons without speaking to them directly. Like we're talking in my classes this term a lot about traditional knowledge of indigenous peoples and how that plays into science. And one of the things we're talking about is how, because they had an oral tradition where they told stories to transfer information, I think that that's a really interesting way that you can convey the issues around climate change without boring the reader with just information. Yeah. Like there's a media organization called Canada Land, and I think CBC did something similar as well. But Canada Land for sure did a series where they just spoke to a bunch of people across Canada about how they are experiencing climate change, like how they believe they've seen their environment change around them. They spoke to people at the West Coast, up north, and out east. And just, they didn't really put too much commentary on it. They just let the stories, they let the stories speak for themselves. I think that could be an interesting way to tell stories to engage people.
I think another aspect to consider is like recognizing how climate change affects people, not just the environment. So how is, like, yeah, sure, the plastic water bottle is going to end up in the ocean, create microplastics, all that kind of stuff. But like, as someone who's isolated from that, who's in North America, who has resources to kind of clean water and stuff like that, they're not going to be personally affected. Like, we're handed everything on a silver platter, we're silver spooned everything. So how do we relate it to the people? How do we show the people that plastic water bottles isn't just going to affect people like the ocean and like people in developing countries, but it's going to affect you personally? I think that it sounds kind of like self-centered and egotistical, but it's kind of like, how is it going to affect me? Because at the end of the day, people care about themselves. Kind of like, you gotta, it's a dog-eat-dog world, you know what I mean? You got to look out for yourself, put food on your own table. So how can we relate it back? How is it going to affect me? How is it going to affect my wallet? How is it going to affect my health? And that's just another aspect that a lot of people don't consider. But it's also like a tool that sometimes people use to kind of portray a message, kind of portray, like, even like Greta using, like, she doesn't want you to be optimistic or hopeful. Like, she wants you to panic because, like, you're really realizing that this is not something that's going to be affecting us 20, 30 years down the line. It's something that's happening right now, and people are feeling the effects right now. And eventually, it's going to be widespread, and it's going to hit all of us. And so that's something you just be aware of, I guess, when we're talking to people, I guess, in that space, and how do we relate it to people? And that goes back to the whole storytelling. Yeah. Okay, so what's the one biggest environmental issue that you'd like to see more support around? So, like, what's kind of your, like, passion project, or what are you kind of interested in?
Totally. Anyone who knows me will know exactly what I'm going to say right now, because it's an issue very close to home for me, or that I'm very passionate about. But I need to see more support around getting people out of their cars. Even though my academic background and my research is more in, like, the natural world, and, like, I study how peatlands can be an effective carbon sink for atmospheric carbon, I know that's a very small piece of the larger climate puzzle. And I think the biggest piece of the climate puzzle is the way we move around. And that is one of the pieces that everybody interacts with every single day. I can talk to you all day about how great peatlands are for sequestering carbon.
Yeah.
You can't do anything about it. Like,
yeah, that's true.
you can't really affect the global patterns of like the peat industry and the government protections of wetlands and stuff. You can petition and vote around that too, but the real thing that you can do is just change how you get around.
Yeah.
Like everyone knows that cars emit the most CO2, like, you know, per person moved or whatever. Mm-hmm. But it also just goes beyond that. Like, yeah, the bus, the train, or the bike are better carbon-wise to get around, but you also need to think about the other ways in which cars impact the environment, not just CO2. Like, you may have read that article recently about how rubber tires are a huge source of microplastics in the ocean. So if we get fewer tires on the road, mm-hmm. then we can start solving that problem as well. You can think of how we give so much space to parking lots in our cities, which are these huge asphalt areas that basically just soak up the sun's heat, right? Because they have like a low albedo, and then they release it as long wave radiation that heats up the atmosphere. Yeah. So those spaces could be anything from community gardens to parks to you know, dense housing that we need. And we've built our whole cities around cars that make them congested, smelly, noisy, dirty. And so if we reduce the number of cars in our cities, the cities will become an even more desirable place to live.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that we need dense cities to live in a sustainable future because we need to save more land for animals, more land for farming. So we need to make our cities as appealable as possible.
Yeah. That's actually super interesting because I've never actually heard that theory. Like, I've never heard someone advocate that transportation is the most prominent issue that we need to resolve. And that's, I think what you said are valid points, and that's just like, even for me, like even my 4 years being here, that's never a concept that has came up. It's always usually about policy decisions, things like that. But
I think that nobody wants to talk about it.
Yeah, that's very true as well.
It's something that everybody does.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, our world is still very much built around the car.
Yeah.
And so a lot of people still do rely on it, and people get very defensive about it. They say, well, I need a car.
Exactly.
And so it's something that kind of reaches a standstill, because when it's something that everybody does and everybody uses, it's very hard to have a discussion about it and say we all need to give this up.
Yeah, because no one wants to seem hypocritical, especially environmentalists, like saying that we need to reduce our emissions and then drive your car 2 hours every day to commute to work, right?
So, exactly.
Yeah, that's actually super interesting. Yeah. Okay, so how do you want to see environmental issues portrayed in the future, and how can listeners kind of support that vision?
That's something I haven't really thought of before. My first sort of knee-jerk thought to that is I kind of want to see more positive stories.
Mm-hmm.
But you even just said it earlier that, like, you know, Greta is calling on us not to be hopeful or optimistic, but to panic and really push for change. But I think sometimes it can be good to hear about the good stories that are happening in the world and the ways that people are successfully adapting to climate change and the way that people are successfully mitigating climate change. Like, I think it was Ethiopia, maybe?
Oh, that the trees?
Planted like millions of trees in a day. Don't quote me on that, but
it was,
something like that. I don't think that got enough coverage, right? Because that's the kind of thing that shows, like, there, where there's a will, there is a way to do it. And you can, like, your government is perfectly able to do that. If the government of Ethiopia can do it, why can't the government of Canada?
Yeah.
And I think we need more, maybe not so necessarily positive stories, but more coverage on solutions.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that listeners could support that by looking in the ways that your city is, what your city is doing to mitigate or adapt to climate change, and celebrating that, like, talk about it. And I guess you have to start by looking into it and seeing, because it may, your city may not be advertising it as well either, but you know, seek out those positive stories and share them and be proud of them when they are there.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting, because I think a lot of us want to, like, obviously want balance and sustainability and things like that. But, like, there's two, like, there's dual-edged swords. You can either have it kind of panic and be super kind of, there's an urgent, dire need to kind of solve this problem. At the same time, let's be hopeful, optimistic. Let's promote, let's invest in our youth and kind of allow change. But the same time, like, in water, there's, like, a theory. There's a lot of, like, research going on about that kind of psychological study, comparing the two, whether you should use fear or optimism to kind of portray environmentalism. Like, even in water, with water crises, like, there's a theory called, like, I think it's, like, fear management or something like that, to kind of emphasizing that there is a fear that you're not going to have water, and that can base people to, oh shit, I got to turn on the switch to be like, my number one priority is protecting the environment so I can have clean water, and that way I can survive. Because obviously the most essential building block of life is water, so you want to make sure that you're able to have that. But at the same time, obviously we were having this conversation earlier that it kind of gets depressing. Like when you're learning about all these kinds of issues, it's depressing. That takes a toll on your mental health, mm-hmm. and that leads to the whole concept of eco-anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, you also, like, it's really tough because you want to stay optimistic, but you also want to be able, you want to be in a position where you're always constantly striving or kind of constantly innovating, because you know tomorrow's not guaranteed. Like, your water, your clean water is not guaranteed. So you want to be able to be in a place that pushes you to kind of make sure that that issue is resolved fully and completely. But at the same time, it's a psychological thing too. Like, mm-hmm. it's a lot of different aspects here to consider. And I think even in the future, there's going to be a lot of research done on those two aspects. I think that's just super cool because it shows you how interdisciplinary and transdisciplinary climate change and environmental really mm-hmm. is. Like, you can focus on so many aspects, but at the end of the day, it's kind of all down to your circumstances and comfort, like you mentioned at the beginning. Like, we all come from different places and different experiences. And so I think it's important to understand and just keep an open mind when we have those conversations.
Yeah, and just like anything, it is kind of about balance. You need to make sure that you are worried and you are pushing for change, but also celebrate the little things. And when you're anxious or worried about those things, think about the good things.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe you'll get through the day.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, there's definitely needs to be more of those good things. Like, I think a lot of people are aware, yeah, sea level is rising, but does anyone know that there's like new machines that are cleaning up plastic from the oceans, right? Unless you're going out and proactively searching for that stuff, it's not going to pop up on your Facebook feed or things like that. Meanwhile, mm-hmm. the Amazon burning is going to obviously pop up because it's a news cycle, right? People want the most attention. What's going to gain the most attention? What's going to get the most shares and likes and things like that? So
mm-hmm.
that's another aspect to consider. And that's why we want to draw the attention to kind of media, because it's such an important tool in advocating and spreading awareness, spreading knowledge, accurate knowledge, which is super important that we should talk about a little bit later. But anyways, the last question I have is, like, do you think there needs to be more of a focus on environmental entertainment, and is there a viable industry for that? And so the reason why I'm asking this question, so for everyone listening, the context of this question is that me and Andrew are kind of working on, Andrew kind of pitched this idea to me to collaborate on kind of, like, we don't really know what to call it. It's just a bunch of ideas right now. But
super early.
Yeah, but because Andrew mentioned, like, he worked for Imprint and kind of he wasn't happy with the way that he was able to storytell or express stuff that he was passionate about in a way that's kind of for everyone to kind of understand and be more accessible. And so Andrew approached me and we're developing a media entertainment platform, just kind of promote environmentalism in a way that kind of combines art, philosophy, thought, poetry, stuff like that, just kind of an interdisciplinary approach to environmentalism and environmentalism awareness. So it's
with a bit of a lighter take on things as well.
Yeah, I'll let you talk more about it. Yeah.
The idea is to have sort of a humorous approach to it as well as serious. In the dream world, it would help achieve the balance that we're talking about, because there would be very serious interviews and articles about these problems that are happening. We want to, like we discussed today, we want to break down certain environmental concepts that there may be a lot of misconceptions about, but we also want to joke about things and have comics and satire and stuff like that. But yeah, so to answer the actual question, I do think there needs to be more of a focus on the lighter side of things, and I do think there's an industry for it, because I don't know, I was kind of alluding to earlier, we need to think globally about these problems, but we need to act locally.
Yeah.
And I think that having a lighter side to things or talking about stuff that you're seeing in your life, even if it's not super serious, can just be a way to frame the problem differently. You know what I mean? Like,
for sure.
If there's a platform for someone to write funny comics about hypothetical climate change scenarios or something, even though the future they may be depicting is one filled with like terrible storms or something, if they can find humor in there somewhere, it can help ease some of our anxiety, I think.
I think something specifically geared towards people who are interested in environmental issues, like you mentioned, like no like ordinary person would like pick up like, I don't know, like a New York Times magazine and kind of like see like a climate change kind of comic and whatnot and be like, this is a serious issue, but it's also funny for me because I understand what's going on. So it's something like that. And like we kind of talked about, it's kind of like BuzzFeed for environmental news, just kind of making it super satirical, entertaining, but at the same time, there's still a serious component, serious message that listeners or reader or viewers are taking away from that. But it's in a way that kind of makes it more engaging, more entertaining, because a lot of the times, especially when in scientific disciplines, it's very technical, it's a lot of data. Here's the trends, blah, blah, blah. Here's the numbers, how much emissions are increasing. But what does that mean? What does that translate into? Mm-hmm. And like, how are people being affected? Like, we're thinking of like having get different like engineers and what their perspectives are like on and like different environmental issues, like having engineers try to identify bird species, which would be pretty funny, but at the same time, it shows how we're not really aware of our surroundings. And so just that's kind of like the idea behind it. And so yeah, just kind of collaborating, getting different people's approaches. And so we've had a lot of different people with a lot of different backgrounds come on. So we have different writers, we have had like podcast hosts, and like even just like first years who are interested in kind of creating that platform and establishing that platform or spearheading a project that allows people to kind of network and share their content. Like people who might be listening right now, or people you know have like are building content, they're writing spoken word, they're making their own kind of art that's related to environmentalism, but there's no really platform to share it, and people are kind of reluctant to share it because it's not as mainstream as we'd like it to be. And so our goal is kind of to streamline it, make it mainstream, and see how we can kind of blow up, you know, make environmentalism sexy or something like that.
Exactly. And like we said at the beginning of the podcast, your ideas do you no good if they're just up in your head.
Exactly.
So this is a sort of accessible way for people nearby to express their thoughts and ideas on the topic.
So is there anything else you want to add about using an entertainment for environmental advocacy? Anything else you want to share about your transportation? I think the transportation, I'm just really thrown back. That's really cool because I've just never heard that. I think you could talk about that a lot more.
Yeah, totally. I mean, we could do a whole episode.
Yeah, we'll do another one on that one.
I would absolutely love the opportunity.
That'd be awesome.
I could get the real stats and everything out. Yeah. But yeah, I don't know. I think that's the biggest thing people can do. If there's one thing you can do, listeners, after listening to this podcast, it's just think about how often you get in your car. You don't have to get rid of it anytime soon, but you also don't have to take it to go somewhere that you could walk to in 5 minutes, you know? And look at some of the alternatives. I know that transit isn't always great, and not everybody can ride a bike everywhere. It's still pretty dangerous out there.
Yeah.
But just think about your options and push for better options as well. One of the biggest things you can do is just, you know, advocate for bike lanes, advocate for new bus routes, right?
Yeah.
Like, we here in Waterloo, at least, just got the new LRT, which is supposed to foster density along the core and make it easier to get around without needing a car. That's the kind of thing that started from a movement of people, and it really took people pushing the government. Like, the government was kind of reluctant to do it. And by that, I mean, like, politicians, like the elected people. So, yeah, push your elected counselors for better alternatives to cars.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and these are things that I'm talking about. Like, just being here with Andrew, having that conversation is a way for you to find, like, identify a problem and then identify a solution that you can take that, like, if you're, like, you're not going to find out about this if you weren't exposed to it, right? And so, like, my job here is to kind of expose you to that, to something that you wouldn't normally be exposed to. And then kind of understand how you can solve it. And that's in really simple terms. Just if you can walk, if you can bike, right?
Mm-hmm.
And just kind of like advocating for what you believe in, advocating if you believe bike lanes should be safer or wider for in terms of safety issues. Just like send your MP like a local, like a letter or something like that.
Exactly.
And just being able to do what you can within your limits, whatever. You don't have to be, it's not black and white, right? It's a scale. You don't have to sell your car or anything. You can still use the car when you need it. Like, you don't have to go full vegan. You can just do what you can within your limits. And that's kind of all we're asking for, right?
Exactly.
So, yeah. Okay, well, thanks a lot, Andrew, for being on the podcast. I really appreciate you sharing your insight.
Thank you.
And hopefully we'll have you on the podcast again to talk about this, more about transportation.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Thanks so much, man.
Thank you for listening to the I Speak for the Trees podcast and supporting the fight against climate change. If you haven't already, please make sure to rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast on Spotify and Apple Music. For more information, feel free to visit www.ispeakforthetrees.com. Until next time, speak for the trees, save the bees, and let's keep it below 1.5 degrees. Peace out, y'all.